special sort of Australian story of coming through difficulties to win against the odds. She is the unexpected. She's the antidote to all those awful American books of how to succeed in business. Her interests range from beef to major construction works here and in Asia, from transport to thoroughbreds, from the excellent Bass Felix wines we've enjoyed here today, to the theatres of London's West End. Among the other appointments and achievements, she is on the board of the Reserve Bank and has chaired the board of the Australian Children's TV Foundation since 1986. And she believes passionately that Australia should be a republic. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Janet Holmes-Acourt.
Thank you very much, Don, for that introduction. And thank you to those responsible for having Bass Felix wines on the table. That's a great honour to bring wine to South Australia. I have to boast that once we brought some wine to the South Australian show and we won Best Table Red, and I have to tell you, our people were more chuffed about that than almost any other award that we'd won, because we know that you produce some of the great Australian reds. Last time I was in Adelaide to speak about the Republic, it was to a function organised by the Australian Republican Movement, which meant that unless there were some spies there, I was preaching to the converted. Today I'm not making that assumption. I presume that there are lots of Republicans amongst you. I suspect there are some monarchists. And if this audience is like all the others I've spoken to, there are quite a few who are sitting on the fence. And possibly you're the people I'm talking to in the main, because I don't think there are too many monarchists who are going to be converted. The Republicans are okay, we've got them in the bag. But if you're on the fence, you're my person. Thanks very much for the invitation to speak to you today about whether Australia should have a head of state who lives here, who's one of us, who is exclusively ours, who we don't share with other nations, and who fully and unequivocally stands for and symbolises our nation. Now, this year, 1999, marks the 350th anniversary of a brief period between King Charles I and King Charles II when Britain was a republic. Oliver Cromwell and later Richard Cromwell served as Chief Lord Protector until Charles II was restored on the 29th of May 1660. The Republic was very short-lived, and its chief advocate and prosecutor, the Solicitor General John Cook, was subsequently hanged. Now, fortunately, no such fate awaits Lewitcher O'Donoghue. I mention this to bring Britain right up front, because as I travel around the country speaking to people, I find there are some who are concerned that we may in some way be offending Britain or the Queen if we vote yes on November the 6th. And in Adelaide, of course, where you possibly have more people of English extraction than anywhere else in Australia, I think it's only fair that I tell you a little bit about my own association with Britain, because my links are very strong. Association and links of family, history, language, culture, sport, and even business. First, my family connection. My maternal grandfather went to work in the rope works at Bridport at the age of 7. Later, he managed to save enough money to come to Australia because he didn't particularly want his sons to start work at 7. My father's family came to the colony of Western Australia very early on to establish the first tannery. They came also from Britain. My husband's family included Sir Robert Holmes, who was the founder of the Restoration Navy. And my first grandchild was born in the borough of Westminster. She will carry dual passports as long as that is permitted. History. Everything I was taught at school was about the history of Britain or Europe. My teacher actually forgot to teach us the Australian curriculum. He was so excited about the reunification of Germany and the kings of England and one or two queens that he forgot literally to teach us any Australian history. Even our geography was Eurocentric. I have to admit, rather guiltily, that when I first started visiting Asia after Robert died, I was staggered when I found out where some of those places were. I had no idea that Indonesia swooped up the side of Malaysia and was underneath Singapore and so on. We were totally ignorant and Eurocentric and Britocentric, if you like. In this country, of course, we live under a system of government and law which is British. Language, my language connection, obviously, English is my first language. It's virtually my only one now, having forgotten the schoolgirl German I was taught. The books we read, the plays we watch are linked with Britain. And in sport, I can't boast anything much myself, but my daughter has a full blue and two half blues from Oxford. And in business, my family owns some of the most important theatres in the world, all of which happen to be in London. I have a home in London. I've spent part of my life there for the last 20 years, and I have many friends there. I feel comfortable there. It feels familiar. Now, I tell you this because being a Republican does not mean being anti-British. It means being pro-Australian. I can't be anti-British. I employ 650 British people in London. And I can assure you that we will not offend Queen Elizabeth II if we vote yes in November. She has in fact stated that this is a matter for the Australian people. And we certainly won't offend the British people. Most of them are staggered to find that the Queen is our head of state. And many, many people I meet in the United Kingdom, and in England in particular, are Republicans. Some of them have to tell you behind their hand, because they're actually Conservative members of Parliament, or they are ex-High Commissioners to Australia from a Conservative government, but there are huge numbers of Republicans in England for England. One of my great friends in England, who is actually as passionate about Australia as I am, sits in the House of Lords, and he was recently asked in Perth, well, what do you think about spending so much time with an Australian Republican? He actually has a title which makes him more entitled to be the King of England than the Queen is to be Queen, but he happens to be just simply a member of the House of Lords. He said, I can assure you, if the head of state of England was an Australian, I'd be a committed Republican. I'm, like many of you here today, utterly a product of Britain in birth, history, culture, language, but I have a gigantic elastic, if you like, it's like as if I'm a bungee jumper, which pulls me back from wherever I am on the planet to the smell of eucalyptus, the dry wind, the red dust, and the salt spray of our oceans. No matter where I am, I'm pulled back here. And as Qantas is one of our sponsors, I'll say that one of the great things for travellers anywhere in the world is to get back on a Qantas flight, because it doesn't matter whether you're in Seattle or San Francisco or Heathrow or Amsterdam, the moment that Australian accent, you hear that, you know that you're home. The question of whether Australia becomes a republic is a question of national maturity, national identity, and national freedom. It's not an act of rejection, it's an act of recognition. And it is to recognise that our deepest respect is for Australia, our deepest affection is for Australia, and our deepest responsibility is to Australia's future. But I believe whether Australia becomes a republic or not, is above all a matter of freedom. The high value we place on freedom in this country is especially cherished by many Australians who've experienced the serious denial of basic freedoms in their former homelands. And John Howard obviously thought so when he put freedom at the centre of his preamble. He wrote, "Australians are free to be proud of their country and heritage, free to realise themselves as individuals, and free to pursue their hopes and ideals." Now, just an aside on this, there are a couple of people in this room today, Tony and Lewitcher, who were at the convention, and they'll vouch for the fact that I was the person who said, when we were discussing the preamble, please, when we've worked out roughly what we want in the preamble, could we give it to some of our great poets and great writers to see what they can do with it? Because I thought that it needed the smell of eucalyptus in it. I didn't actually have Les Murray and John Howard in mind. But John Howard has drafted with Les Murray a preamble, and we will be asked to vote on it in November. And it has freedom at the very core of it. And surely the ultimate freedom would be that any Australian should be free, if asked, to be Australia's head of state. To deny this freedom is un-Australian. To choose people for public office or any office because of their birth and their religion, except perhaps in the newspaper industry, is not really what Australia is all about. And certainly I find it very hard to imagine the Australian people seeing Charles and Camilla as relevant to us. We have some wonderful politicians in Western Australia, one of whom, Hendy Cowan, was at the convention. And Hendy's is just verging on coming out, I reckon. I'm working on it. But Hendy's view was, "Janet, if only the Queen would send us a letter saying, 'OK, I resign.'" Now, I tell you that because, for me, that's about how simple this move is. I believe with a passion that we need a head of state who's one of us. I feel it in here, and I believe in the next few months it's the task of those of you who are converted to the cause to encourage all Australians to feel in their gut that this is right and that now is the time. Of course, we have to win legal and technical debates, and we have to point out how flimsy the arguments and the scare tactics of the monarchists are. But really, this is about passion. It's about how we feel about ourselves and how we feel a desire for change in our guts, and we have to have lots of people feeling that way. Now, what of the model on which we will vote in November? I support the proposed model because, as I've said, it represents minimal change. And that is how we do things here. We don't make giant leaps forward in Australia. We move step by tiny step. Ever since Federation, we've been taking steps to become a free and independent nation. We no longer have to take our laws to the House of Commons to have them ratified. We no longer have retired British Army officers as our governors or governors general. We have our own national anthem, and we have our own court, our highest court, as our highest court. We no longer trot off to London, to the Privy Council, to make sure these guys are okay and making the right decisions. The model, I will go through just quickly how the president will be chosen in the model that's being proposed to us. And remember, this model was voted on at the convention after 13 days of very hard negotiation. Well, not hard negotiation, it was delightful negotiation, and consultation between 152 people from every background Australia has to offer. And the model that is proposed came out of that, and this is how it goes. The Australian people will have the opportunity to nominate people they feel would be suitable to be president. In exactly the same way as the Australian people can nominate people for Orders of Australia. A committee of eminent Australians, chosen from all walks of life and all backgrounds, will then sift through what will no doubt be an enormous list of people and make a recommendation of a few names to the Prime Minister of the day. The Prime Minister will make his choice. He will then go to the Leader of the Opposition and say, is this okay with you? And they will then together take this person's name to a joint sitting of two Houses of Parliament, and provided two-thirds of those people agree, that will be our President. Now, can you just imagine how much more acceptable Sir William Dean's appointment would have been if Paul Keating, the Prime Minister of the day who chose Sir William Dean, had to go to the then Leader of the Opposition and say, Bill Dean, okay by you? Fine. Okay, we'll trot down to Parliament House, we'll get everyone together and see if two-thirds of the people approve of him. As it happens, I think Sir William Dean is a perfectly acceptable and marvellous Governor-General. I think he would be, he's my choice for the first Australian head of state and the first president. Because I think for those people who are nervous that catastrophic things will happen, nervous that this is insulting to people, nervous of what terrible things will happen if Australia becomes a republic, he would be a marvellous healing appointment. The Australian people will have a very big say in who their president is. And now I want to quote from Darrell Williams, who has the Federal Attorney General, who has charge of drafting the bill. And this is from Hansard. Darrell says, it is important to be quite clear about what the bill will not do. It will not alter the day-to-day operation of the Commonwealth Parliament. It will not alter the current federal balance between the Commonwealth and the states. It will not give the President powers different from those of the Governor-General. It will not create an office of President that is more grand or expensive than the office of the Governor-General. Contrary to some rather colourful predictions, it will not authorise the construction of a presidential palace. It will not alter the Australian flag or the national anthem. It will not mark a break with our tradition of stable parliamentary democracy. In fact, and this is still Darrell, in fact, it is not unreasonable to suggest that the bill is of less practical significance than the Australia Acts, which were passed in 1985 by the Commonwealth and United Kingdom Parliaments at the request of all the states, and passed in the absence of a referendum. Those acts have terminated the power of the United Kingdom Parliament to legislate for Australia. About time. It should be clear that the Republic Bill would not greatly change the basic governmental arrangements that have served Australia so well, nor would it graft another country's republic model onto those arrangements. That's our Attorney General. On November the 6th, we're going to be asked to vote on two questions. One, would you like an Australian head of state chosen by the method I've outlined, and two, whether you like the preamble or not. Much has been said by a vocal few about direct election, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit because, firstly, it's a great furphy to confuse the Australian people with, but secondly, because The Australian people have said we don't want a politician. If we have direct election, we will get a politician, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I also want to say that direct election is not the question we're being asked. On the 6th of November, we're being asked to vote on John Howard and Les Murray's preamble and whether we want an Australian head of state chosen by the method I've outlined. 10% of the people who were sent to the Constitutional Convention went on a direct election ticket. Only, 10% of the people who were elected there were on a direct election ticket. Many of them have come out since and changed their minds and said, hey, you know, I'm more in favour of a Republican and Australian head of state than I am on that methodology. The direct election idea was rejected overwhelmingly by the Constitutional Convention. It's not a question we're being asked, but I want to tell you why I don't support it. Firstly, the President, if directly elected, would be the only figure or element in the government structure in Australia who was directly elected by the people. We don't directly elect John Howard or Richard Court or any of our state premiers. In fact, John Howard got 40,000 votes. 40,000 Australians put him number one on their ticket and he became our Prime Minister because he was leader of the Federal Liberal Party. Now, it is possible that if we had direct election, that a president could get 8, 9, 10 million votes. How much more powerful than the Prime Minister do you reckon that person's going to feel? And I don't want that system. I do not want a system where we have yet another layer of government in that we have somebody who says, well, 10 million Australians think I'm okay. I think that is a recipe for disaster. In any dispute, the President couldn't help feel more important than the Prime Minister if he'd been directly elected. As I've said, the Australian people have clearly said often that they do not want the head of state to be a politician. We want our head of state to be a neutral adjudicator, if you like, a neutral representative. Now, I've done a lot of these speeches around Australia, and sometimes I ask people to put their hands up for these questions, but I won't do that to you here. The first question I ask people is, do you want a politician to be head of state? All the hands go up, no way, okay. Who do you think in Australia has the machinery, the money, the power and the people in place to run an election campaign? And it's quite interesting. You get the same answers every time. The ALP, the Liberal Party, Kerry Packer. They never mention Rupert Murdoch. Perhaps they know he's an American. Now, if we were having direct election, five people in this room said, I'd be quite interested in being Prime Minister of Australia, President of Australia, and one of them happened to be Kerry Packer. You can actually forget Kerry Packer. Ross Perot was the richest man in America when he stood for the position of President, and even he could not beat the machinery of the Democrats and the Republicans. Money doesn't do it. Machinery is what does it. So you have four people left, because we've had five from this room. One's Kerry Packer, he's knocked out, so you take the other four. The first thing that will happen will be the ALP will say, we think you're the best bet. And the Liberal Party will say, well, we really like you. And as sure as hell, one of those two people will win, and even if they were not a politician when they went into the campaign, as Neville Rann has said, they sure as hell would be when they won. Because they would owe favours to either the ALP or the Liberal Party, the parties who got them there. The other thing, I can say this to you because I'm a West Australian, you're South Australians, forget any of us ever. Forget Tasmania, forget Queensland, forget the Northern Territory, forget South Australia, forget Western Australia. It would be Sydney or Melbourne. The smaller states, not a hope in hell. It's a great shame that the direct electionists and those who want more changes are linking up with the monarchists and behaving as spoilers. One of the things we agreed at the Constitutional Convention was that there would be more conventions so that we could take more little steps along our way to being an interesting nation. So where are we at the moment? There have been Yes coalition groups formed in each state of Australia. There's a Yes committee which has been appointed by the Prime Minister, and a No committee appointed by the Prime Minister, and each of these committees have been given $7.5 million to run their campaigns. The government will run its own education campaign starting fairly soon, I hope, because I want to tell you there are a lot of people who don't even know who our head of state is, let alone want to change her. So we need to get a lot of information out and about to the Australian people so they are aware of what's happening on the 6th of November. Because some of you will be from business backgrounds, I've tried to find business-related reasons for our president to be one of us. When our present head of state travels overseas to promote trade, as she does and has just done, I can promise you she's not pushing Vass Felix wine or South Australia, the South Australian wine or Australian beef or manufactured goods. She's working for Great Britain and England in particular. And we need a head of state who can do this for us. But I'm afraid that this issue really is more about what we think about ourselves than it is about what others think of us. Letting the world see that we've taken one final step, though, can't be a negative. Now, much has been said about Australia's record in referenda, how cautiously Australians respond to referenda and have done in the past. But there are some fantastic and glowing exceptions. When Prime Minister Menzies tried to declare the Communist Party illegal in 1951, and I know a lot about this because I was there, my dad was a member, the Australian citizens responded in the spirit of fair play and they said, no, we are not going to deny our fellow Australian citizens freedom of political choice. 1951 was absolutely the height of the Cold War. Reds under the beds, my dad having to hide his books in the under the back seat of his Ford Prefect and so on. But even then, the Australian people said no. And in 1967, similarly, unhesitatingly, Australians granted Aboriginal people civil rights. The time is right for a referendum for us to decide that we want a head of state who's one of us. The time is right for us to vote resoundingly yes for a republic. And I'd like you to just ponder on how incredibly embarrassing it will be if we vote no. And on the 6th, I can see the sun in London, on the 7th of November, saying Australians don't think that out of the 18 million of them, there's one who's good enough to be their own head of state. They will love it. Now, what can you do? If you're from the press, you should be honest. In Western Australia, we have an editor of our local paper who is a direct electionist. His paper pushes that line, and his paper also pushes the line that the people do not want a politician. Now, to not draw the linkage for people between direct election and the fact that they will get a politician, I think is dishonest. I think this is, for me, this is an absolutely apolitical thing, whether Australia becomes a republic or not. People from all walks of life, all political parties, all religious backgrounds, every ethnic group is represented on both sides. It's not a political thing, and I think the press needs to be honest in its explanations to the Australian people. And in fact, it was very interesting at the convention, and I'm sure Lawitcha and Tony will agree with this, that the press didn't actually know how to handle us, because we were working in what I see as a sort of 21st century manner, in an almost, I'm not a rabid feminist, but a sort of female manner. There was consultation. There was great cooperation. And I remember one morning waking up and seeing in the paper a headline, huge headline, split in Republican ranks. And I remember saying to the press, you think that if there's a split there are differences of opinions being expressed. It's a split. In fact, it means different opinions are being expressed. It was a different way of doing business, and it's something that people can learn from. And I think in this campaign lead-up, the press need to behave in a possibly different manner from the one they're used to in so-called political debates, which is given both sides of the story. Individually, I think you should talk and speak out whenever and wherever you can, particularly if you're on my side, to your friends, to your families, to wherever you come up against people. But learn about it. The monarchists have got some pretty savage and irrelevant and blatantly dishonest things to say. For instance, won't be participating in the Commonwealth Games. I mean, that's just nonsense. Learn some answers to the oft-asked questions, and there are information brochures available. Learn honest, sane, sensible and reasonable ones. Realise that people who are on the other side feel just as passionately as we do, and I think we should show respect for that. Behaving with respect towards them seems to win, actually, because often they don't reciprocate. Encourage young people to turn out to vote. A lot of young people feel a republic is a fait accompli and they will forget to register to vote and they will forget to turn up. I did one of these talks in London a couple of weeks ago to alumni of the University of Western Australia, and I was so pleased that we have some marvellous Australian students all over England in universities, very clever Australians, but one of these young men was at Cambridge and he'd already got from Australia House the forms for every Australian student in London to make sure they were registered to vote. He had the information on the Republican cause, he'd sent that to him. He was giving them the government's website and so on, so they could all turn out on the 6th of November and vote for a republic. Remember your mothers. Some of them may be unsure of change, any sort of change, and they might need a bit of convincing. And your fathers. Some fathers fought in wars, and they may think that they did it for the Queen. They actually did it for Australia, or freedom, or anything else you can think of. Adapt your reasons to the audience. Now, I don't mean change your reasons, but you have to emphasise different areas to different groups, depending on where you believe they may have problems. And now I want to do something that I do every time I speak about the Republic, and that is to read from Tim Winton. And Lewitcha and Tony have heard this a couple of times, but I love it. How would this be for a preamble? We feel our nationhood. We recognise ourselves whole and human. We know our story for just that long, long enough to see how we've come and how we've battled in the same corridor that time makes for us. Then we burst into the moon, the sun and the stars of who we really are, being Australian, perfectly, always, every place, us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we got a message. We'll now take questions from the media. And if you like that address, you can see it again at 6 o'clock on the ABC and Stateline. We'll now take questions from the media. And please, would you give your name of your organisation and your name before you ask your question? Thank you. I think we're starting with Roy Eccleston from The Australian.
Mr. Holmes of Court, Roy Eccleston from The Australian. Two questions. First of all, you've talked about the freedom to become a president. If there is a successful vote for the Republic in November, would you consider having your name put forward? Would you rule out having your name put forward to become a president of an Australian Republic? Second question, how important is the words of that referendum question? How important do you think it is to have the reference to the Queen in the question? And do you think that John Howard will allow that necessary change to the question if he believes that that is likely to increase the Republican vote?
Okay, thank you. The question you ask about would I, you know, accept nomination is the hardest question, because I want an Australia where every Australian, where my granddaughter, despite the fact that she was born in Westminster, the borough of Westminster, where every Australian can aspire to being president. So saying, no, I wouldn't, means that I'm not really on the right track. Saying yes means I'm, you know, in the words of my children, and I hope this is not on the ABC, up myself. It's a really difficult question. I want an Australia where everyone can aspire to be the president of this nation. But as I've said, my number one choice for the first president is Sir William Dean, because I think it would be healing. On the other the other question, it's not any knowledge I'm bringing to South Australia that you're not aware of, but we don't actually have a Prime Minister who's too much in favour of this stuff. And I don't think it's surprising that people might think that he would quite like to do anything he could to stop a yes vote. I don't think it's helpful to have the words "replace the Queen" in the question which we're being asked. But on the other hand, I have great faith that the Australian people are not silly, and I think after a campaign, an education campaign, and after the advertising campaign, the Australian people will see the question really for what it is, which is saying, do you want an Australian to be head of state? So I think it's slightly more difficult if her name's on the question, but I don't think it's going to blow the whole thing for us.
David Bland? Oh, no, sorry. You're not David Bland.
Excuse me. Mrs. Holmes, according to this week's news poll, support for the Republic is slipping amongst the young. Why do you think that is, and what can you do to turn it around?
Yep. I actually didn't take very much notice of that news poll, because I think it's very early days, and I don't quite know what question was asked. I'm not particularly concerned. My problem is I don't ever meet anyone who's a monarchist. Everyone I meet is a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, and particularly young people who come to me constantly and say, what can we do? What can we do about this? I think that it's early days. I would not be too concerned about the results of that news poll, but I think there is a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of work to be done by the grassroots Republicans, who were, after all, the people who were responsible for getting huge numbers of Republicans elected to the Constitutional Convention. So I think there's hard work to do, and education campaign, advertising campaigns, I have been doing quite a lot of these, and I hope that everyone goes home and starts talking about it, and I've had good response from people saying I was on the fence but now I'm not. And one woman I was in a place called Dalwallinu in Western Australia, and one woman who was my age had died in the wool Republican, said her son was 23 and he was a bit worried about it. So she was going home with all my pamphlets to convince him. But I think it's early days.
Mike Smith.
Janet, Mike Smithson, Channel 7 News. Do you think that given a general apathy amongst Australians towards anything, given the tens of millions of dollars that is being spent on this campaign, it's a two-part question. Do you think that at the end of the day that many Australians might see this as political overkill and a waste of money in spending all of that? And secondly, do you think that it, perhaps the whole debate is the domain of people, and I'm not saying that you're obsessed with it, but people who tend to be obsessed?
I just heard my friend, my great friend, Lawitcha, say she is obsessed. First of all, it's not tens of millions of dollars that are being spent. The Prime Minister has given $7.5 million to the monarchists and $7.5 million to us. I think this $15 million is a lot, and there will be other amounts spent, but it won't be tens of millions of dollars. And it is a pretty major thing for a nation to come out and say, OK, we don't want to share our head of state with a whole lot of other countries. We want someone who's ours and who lives here. An Englishman said to me recently, when did the Queen, who he was on the fence, when did the Queen last come to Australia? And I said, I think it was 8 years ago. And he said, oh my God, I'm sold, I'm a Republican. I think $15 million, I mean, for the West Australian Symphony Orchestra, which I chair, or Black Swan, or the Adelaide Theatre Company, think, oh, $15 million, what couldn't we do with that? But this is a very big issue, and we need to spend a bit of money on it and focus people's attention a bit. It's not a vast amount of money in the scheme of things. What was the other part of your question? Oh, yes, well, you've seen the answer to that. No, there are lots of people who are not obsessed but do say, you know, this is just a nonsense to not be a republic, to not have a head of state who lives here. Sorry, lady in the purple.
Nadine?
Janet, Nadine Williams from the Advertiser. Well, I'm caught up in the passion. The idea of a new republic in the new millennium sounds very exciting. And I've also got two questions. The first one is, given that the women's vote in Australia has won and lost elections, is there any particular specific push to get women to vote independently from, say, their husbands on this issue? And also, what do you see as the three major social issues to be tackled by the new republic? The three social issues that we will need to address as a new republic.
Okay. Well, maybe I should come clean and tell you a little story from my life with Robert. Up until 1972, we used to go to the polls and cancel each other out. And in 1972, I convinced him to vote with me and we changed the government. So I think that women in this time in history are quite capable of voting on their own. I did have a couple of sentences in here about, because I suspected there might be more women here than men, but it's about equal numbers. But I was going to say, if you are a Republican and you are a woman, I think you can play a great role in ensuring a yes vote, because women have a natural conciliatory style. They have a natural desire to make people feel comfortable. They have a natural respect for the points of view of others, and that will be invaluable in this campaign in ensuring that a president is one of us. The social issues that we've got are not too hard to really come up with, are they? I mean, we have a situation where we have far too few people in Australia doing far too much. Everybody I know works far more than the 40 hours a week that the unions have fought for. Everyone I know is... I pass my friends and we're in the morning on the way to the office and we're all yawning and we're on our way to work because we're all too tired. We have far too few people doing too much and far too many people with nothing to do because they're unemployed. a second ill, I think, it's got to be, in Western Australia, so far this year, I'm not quite sure about the numbers, but last year at this time, there were about 89 young people who died, and people, older people, of drug overdoses. The Prime Minister was coming to Perth at about the time that he refused to have the drug trial, and I thought it would be a fantastic idea at lunchtime to get 89 healthy people to lie down at the major intersection in Perth to give people an idea of what 89 people look like. So I think there's another thing we've got to solve. And if we solve that, it seems to me that what we do in this country is whack people in jail for doing naughty things without going back down here and saying, well, why actually did you become a drug addict in the first place? What's wrong with it, this country, that people want to? I mean, Lewitcha must weep for the number of Aboriginal children of 3 and 4 who are sniffing petrol. What's the cause of it, not what the... You know, whack-a-mole in Western Australia, we have sea containers now being converted into prison cells, if you don't mind, which is quite an interesting irony if you think of how we got here in the first place. So, drugs, unemployment, and I think we need a great... we need to feel better about ourselves as Australians than perhaps some of us do. Very lucky. In the main, we're lucky to be here.
Brad Crouch.
Brad Crouch from the Sunday Mail. You mentioned the smell of eucalyptus, freedom, what it is to be Australian and what it is to be un-Australian. Isn't there a divisive inference in this, in that if you choose to have a political belief in the status quo, that you're somehow not a patriotic, dinky-dye Australian?
No, I'm not. No, I think that we dinky-dye Australians do have a respect for everybody having a view. How is this relevant to something that happened down here? I know you spoke about being in trouble because you'd organised an Australia Day function at which someone had spoken about the monarchy being fantastic. And people were furious. Well, in this country, the great thing is that I can come this week and talk about the Republic, and you can all think I'm obsessed. Next week, you can have someone along to talk about the monarchy, and he might be obsessed, or she might be obsessed. I think that I'm not saying that at all. I'm not trying to divide the country. I'm just saying there's room for different views, and I hope that more people have the view that we want a head of state who also likes the smell of eucalyptus.
Cheryl Nixon.
Cheryl Nixon from Australian Associated Press. Thank you for your speech. You've spoken passionately about the Republic, and I know that you also speak passionately about Aboriginal affairs and other issues that are close to your heart. Do you think that you can make a bigger impact from your position at the moment as a businesswoman, or have you seriously considered a role in politics as a politician? And do you think that you can make an impact there?
No, I actually haven't. I think... I don't know whether you're allowed to say this at Press Club lunch, but I think to expose yourself to the criticism of the press every single day of your life is a very noble thing to do, and I'm not about to do it.
Adrian Rochella.
Adrian Rochella from Channel 10. As a journalist, just for something a little different, I'm going to focus on the negative. If the vote doesn't get up in November, when do you think this question will be put to Australians again?
A very, very long time. I think a very long time. I think that it will be used against us. And I think it'll be very sad. I mean, it doesn't mean that on the 7th of November, or maybe the 8th, we'll have the 7th off, but on the 8th, we'll be out there trying again. But I think it'll take quite a while before it comes again.
Andrew Mayle, the ABC, State Line.
This is Holmes of Court, Andrew Mayle from State Line. Have you contributed any money to the Republican movement at this stage, or do you intend to? And if it's not a rude question, if you do, how much would it be?
It is a very rude question.
Would you be prepared to tell us if you are a contributor?
In our own way, Lewitcher and Tony and I are all contributors.
Ray Fewings?
Ray Fewings, 5D, and I'm a talkback announcer. I love England, and I'm a Republican as well. My callers ring me, and they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They also say it's a plot. It's a left-wing plot. How do you respond to that? I know that there are a lot of right-wing politicians in favour, but how would you respond to those callers?
Well, I would respond firstly to the if it ain't broke, don't fix it, because I think that's a nonsense. If it ain't broke, don't fix it doesn't mean that it can't be improved. Everything can be improved, and we're trying to improve, hopefully we're trying to improve ourselves and our society and our lives all the time. So just because it's not broken doesn't mean we can't make it better. As for the left-wing plot, I mean, I think that's a nonsense. I quoted from Darrell Williams, who's a very right-wing... actually, Darrell, I have to say, I went to school with Darrell and I went to university. I was Guild Secretary when he was Guild President of University. I know he's a very right-wing bloke. But he is a Republican, Peter Costello. You wouldn't actually put him left of centre. This is not... it's not a plot, and B, it isn't political. I mean, it's really important for people to realise it is not political. It's not religious. It's not ethnic. It's Australian. And, in fact, I wonder if the previous questioner who asked me about money... was going to lead on to this being a rich man's game, because one of the things the monarchists do tend to say is that this is an elitist thing, this is the elite who are after this. And I scratch my head and I think, what could be more elite than the royal family? I mean, it's a bizarre concept to think that it's elite because Lewitcher and Tony and I are involved, and we all have jobs and we're lucky. The concept of a monarchy is incredibly elitist. Only one person can get that job.
John Larkin of The Age.
Hello.
Alive.
Mischievous, I'm not quite sure what's coming.
I was formerly of The Age, I'm now Feral.
Feral.
One of the advantages of being freelance is that one is allowed to be what is badly called a little subjective. So I'd firstly like to congratulate you for your clarity and your courage and the fact that you're prepared to bring all this out to us with trust so that we debate this in a sense of democracy and a sense of respect and decency. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And a question, please, John. And a question, please.
I'm getting to it. The second is an aside. It's a pity that the referendum wasn't on the 11th of November, when some of us would remember, and as they say in the film Hiroshima Mon Imore, the great sin is forgetfulness, remember the shame and the humiliation of Whitlam trying to ring the palace to find out what was happening and the Queen was asleep. The third thing is the specific question, and that is that on his last visit to Australia, Ralph Nader, was asked by another lazy journalist, tell us about apathy in Australia. And he said, I don't believe that that's the case here. He said, it's that Australians do not have a sense of individual power. Mm-hmm. I would like to know how the Republican movement can address this specifically. Yeah. It seems to me this is the essence of the question.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Sadly, we haven't got very long, but on the matter of apathy, I'm a huge fan of an American futurist called Robert Theobald. We have talked about some of the social problems I think we have to address, and Robert Theobald and I are on the same line. I think a few years ago I started getting pretty depressed about economic rationalism and the obsession of the world being for the bottom line and the dollar. And I thought I was on my own, and I started making a library of books written by people who were starting to say the sorts of things that I wanted to say. Charles Handy, Will Hutton, John Ralston Saul, Robert Theobald, and so on and so on. Robert Theobald came to Australia after a series of his lectures were broadcast on the ABC, and thousands of people turned out to hear him. They were not apathetic. They were Australians who were thinking, how do we empower ourselves to change what we don't like is going on? Now, I think that the Republican movement has to, in saying that I think this is about what we feel about ourselves and what we think about ourselves, we have to get that message out and make people feel better about ourselves. I'll just tell you one last story. I met through Robert Theobald, a futurist who does a lot of work in Western Australia, an American called Annie Macbeth. She's been there for 30 years. She was recently talking to a group like this, mostly men, however, about how new trading bloc is forming around the Pacific Rim and so on, and how the nations of this area have come together and they've said, well, the people who should run this and head this up are the Indians. And the Indians said, no, thanks very much. We're highly flattered and delighted that you've chosen us, but we think the only people who can lead this trade bloc are the Australians. And two Australians looked at each other and quite audibly said, oh, no, we can do that. No. Now, we've got to do something about that. We have Australians doing fantastic things all over the world. And we've got to let them know, you and everybody has to let other people in Australia know about this and know that we can achieve great things. So I think that a republic and having a head of state who's one of us is just another step along the way to putting ticks in the boxes of this becoming a great and free nation. Thank you.
So just two more questions. Peter Adams, ABC.
Hello, Mrs. Holmes. Court. Peter Adams from the ABC. Is the Republican cause the major challenge driving your life at the moment? If not, what others are there fueling you?
I'll tell you something I've learned in my life. If I was to tell you now that my main challenge is whether I have mangoes or pears for breakfast in the morning, that is what you'd all write about. And people in the press club in Adelaide have gone to a lot of trouble to organise this lunch and get me here to talk about the Republic, and that's what I've done. And I don't want to distract the press's attention by talking about what I have for breakfast or what my challenges are. Okay?
The fact is, you could have, one, sat back, probably lived off the company's earnings. You chose to take the helm. You've also chose to take pretty much the helm of the Republican movement. What drives you to branch yourself, to commit yourself so forcefully in so many different directions?
Oh, God. I just think I've got a lot of energy. I've got a lot of energy, and I do believe in this country, and I believe in what Tim Winton says and what Murray Bale writes and what our great writers and poets and composers and musicians and people say about this country. And I guess with Lewitcha and Tony, we want other people to feel that good about the place. We know we've got problems, but we won't solve them if we all think we're not very good at anything.
Was there a defining moment that made you stand up and say, I've got to get into this?
I've got to what?
I've got to get into this?
No, I'm genetically programmed to be here.
Finally, Robert Main of the Bulletin, who won't distract you at all, I'm sure.
No, of course I won't, Mr. President. Mrs. Holmes, of course, I thought I might just draw your attention to the fact that the Prime Minister allocated the $15 million and we paid for it, in spite of what you said. Could I invite you to look across to my table 27 in the corner over there? There's a woman sitting at my table whose name I can't remember, who is a passionate monarchist. I haven't heard a monarchist today, and I thought you might like to ask her to put a question to you. Where is she? She's standing up now, I think.
I was quite amazed when you said you'd never met a monarchist. I thought perhaps they weren't game to say. I'm a monarchist because I feel that there's a hidden agenda in everything, and I would like to see the constitution we're going to get before I vote for a republic. Also, I'm a fifth generation Australian, and I think that doesn't make a difference to your outlook. I just wondered how many people at table 27 were fifth generation. I was just about to ask them, actually.
Well, I'm a sixth, I think, or something like that, but that makes me even more of a Republican. Mm. The constitution that we're going to get is frightfully simple for you to get. I can send you a copy of it. I mean,
as it is in mind at the moment, but as it won't be 10 years from now.
No, but that won't matter whether we have a republic or not. We'll still, you know, our constitution has been changing a lot over the years. Well, I don't think so. But anyway, I can understand that. And there is a fear thing. That's why I want it to be Bill Dean. Because if the same person comes across from this one way of doing things to another, we'll all feel better about it. Yeah. Feel
I'd
more
just
secure.
Like to add that the very fact that I'm here proves I have an open mind.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Mrs. Holmes-Acourt. I have an embarrassing presentation to make to you to take back to your feeble winemakers at Bass Felix some decent South Australian booze. It's a 1993 Magnum of Orlando's San Hugo Coonawarra Cabernet Sauvignon, and I hope you love it.
I will indeed. Thank you very much.